I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together. Have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back, Movie Minglers. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And we are doing our 20th episode today. We're in the 20s now.
Which is amazing. Congratulations on 20 episodes, honey.
Congratulations. It went by so fast.
This really has felt like we have done so much.
It's been a lot, but at the same time, 20.
20 is everything to be very, you know, something very accomplished about it. First of all, we're a third of the way done. It's exciting because, like, a lot of podcasts, like, don't last 20 episodes.
No.
You know, I've had friends start podcasts that last maybe 5 at the most.
Especially doing weekly.
It's not an easy thing to do, and I'm very proud of us for doing it, so well done.
And hopefully our listeners out there can tell there's a bit of an audio change.
Yeah. Somebody got real fancy with the setup, and it wasn't me.
I'm having a little fun buying a couple different pieces of equipment. Both of us finally have headphones to wear.
Which is weird.
It's weird. Nice. Can really hear everything now.
Everything. Including.
Yeah, if you hear that, that's Maggie fanning herself. We are in mid-June now.
Yeah, it's getting warm out.
It's getting warm.
And then having to close up the entire, you know, our entire home completely.
All the windows are closed, fans are off, just so they don't make extra noise in the background.
So if you hear a little thwarp of a fan, I promise it's just me trying to cool myself down.
It's going to be a sweaty summer.
Oh, it's going to be such a sweaty summer. And then, you know, with the kids getting out of school soon, too, it's going to be, oh, wow, your chair is very squeaky.
Yep. Everything's going to make noise.
Everything's so much louder now. Okay, well, so this is the first, stop it.
Sorry.
This is the first episode with our new setup, friends, so if we seem a little gagged by that, that's what's going on. But we'll get used to it, just like we've gotten used to everything so far these days.
Yeah, and for episode 20, we're doing WALL-E.
WALL-E.
Our second Pixar film.
Our most beloved boy. I have a lot of feelings and emotions and history surrounding WALL-E that I can't wait to get into. This is going to be a bit of a spoiler alert, but I fucking love this movie.
Yeah,
and,
big spoiler.
Yeah, I just think the world of WALL-E. I think it might genuinely be my favorite Pixar film to have ever been made so
far.
Yeah. I can't think of one that tops it.
Well, we're not to my favorite one yet, but we'll get there, and I'm not going to spoil which one is my favorite.
But I think I know.
Ooh. So we got WALL-E. WALL-E was directed by Andrew Stanton and was released in 2008, mm-hmm. same year that our last episode came out, The Dark Knight.
Yeah, which is, I mean, sort of beautiful that both these movies came out the same year. 2008 was a good year for film.
And Iron Man. I mean, we've said that before. I love the fact that Iron Man was 2008 along with so many other great movies. We also got, real quick about Andrew Stanton. He also directed both Finding Nemo and Finding Dory,
mm-hmm.
and A Bug's Life, and one of my favorite sci-fi awful awesome films, which was John Carter.
Actually, God, you know what? I don't think I've seen John Carter since the day we saw it in theater,
right.
And I remember it just being terrible.
I remember it being terrible as well, but over the years, I've really enjoyed rewatching it.
Yeah.
And then we've talked about the guys from the Chexicans, Heroes mm-hmm. Reforged before, and they absolutely love John Carter, especially Hector.
Hector Navarro, my sweet love.
And after listening to some of their positive things they had to say about it, I went back and watched it again. I'm like, you know what? It is a fun movie to watch. Even though Taylor Kitsch. Yeah, the guy who doesn't act anymore.
Shockingly, I mean, he wasn't even a cardboard cutout or a shoe. He was just somehow there.
Which I think wasn't he also the lead? Worse. Wasn't he also the lead for Battleship? Or was that the guy from Avatar? See, yeah, they all like, look and sound and I act never saw alike. So.
Battleship. So.
But that doesn't matter.
In WALL-E, Andrew Stanton has his first ever live action shot that he ever films, which are the scenes with Fred Willard.
Was that done by him or the assistant director for the live action?
According to IMDb, it was his first time ever filming anything with an actual, like with a real actor on a real set versus because everything else he'd done beforehand has been animated.
The credits were confusing. They just showed a director for live action segments and it wasn't him, but maybe that was just an assistant director and I just read it wrong.
Yeah.
But either way,
we could go digging, but we're not going to.
No, because that's not really important or why we're.
If it's on the IMDb trivia credit, then damn it, it's real.
It's real. The internet doesn't lie.
The internet would never lie to us.
WALL-E was written by Peter Docter, who wrote Soul, Inside Out, Up, both Monster Inc. movies, Toy Story 1 and 2. He's also a producer and won 3 Oscars for Soul, Inside Out, and Up. Soul, he won overall for Best Animated Film, so he got the Producers Award, and then Inside Out and Up, he won for the screenplays of those movies. And I remember, as soon as I saw his face on IMDb, I was like, oh yeah, I know that guy. He always goes up every Oscars to accept an award. So, or not every Oscars, but a handful of them, because, you know, we've talked about it before, Pixar
wins
went through a moment in time when they just were sweeping
raking them in.
Oscars for animation.
So I do have a little note about the creation of this movie, which I may as well jump in with right now. The concept of the film evolved from a now famous lunch that took place between John Lasseter, Pete Docter, and Joe Ranth in 1994. Toy Story was nearing completion, and the writers sat down to brainstorm ideas for their next projects. Out of this lunch was born WALL-E, A Bug's Life, Monsters, Inc., and Finding Nemo. Stanton and Docter outlined the film before Toy Story was completed, but production did not resume until after Stanton completed Finding Nemo. So, the idea and the concept of WALL-E has been around for a very, very long time. I think it's kind of wonderful that these three men sat down and kind of, like, charted out the path that their careers were going to take and that their studio was going to take. And we got a lot of bangers out of that lunch. So it's pretty exciting. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is why I think somebody, I just seen this on Threads or Instagram, where somebody was showing in this Pixar movie, you see this thing that doesn't show up for another 2 years in another movie.
Yeah.
In that movie, you see something that doesn't show up for another
two. Yeah, they're always so they're really teasing good at hiding movie what's to come.
What's to come,
yeah. Because that's, you know, especially back when they put out a movie every couple of years, because they were only working at one, maybe two at a time. You know, it's kind of like, oh, here's your little Easter egg. What's coming? It's like when Doug the dog is in Ratatouille, you know, like his shadow is in Ratatouille.
In one of the closets in Monsters, Inc., there's a bunch of clownfish hanging up in a closet, you know, and it's inside the closet.
The Pizza Planet trucks in every single film. Yeah, well, that's like, yeah, it's, you know.
A wonderful homage to the first Toy
Story. I kind of love that they put little hidden things in, and even things for movies that never happened. Like, there are, I don't know the exact films offhand, but I do know that there was a movie that they were going to do that was kind of like the film Rio, about like the last macaw on the planet finding the other last macaw on his planet and having to like fall in love and, you know, perpetuate the species or something. They were going to do something like that that got scrapped, but there are kind of like remnants of that story sprinkled through a couple other, you know, films that actually released. So yeah, Pixar does some pretty great things.
I want to be able to shout out the other writer of WALL-E. His name is Jim Reardon. He also wrote Zootopia and both Wreck-It Ralph movies.
Zootopia, and both Wreck-It Ralph movies. I don't remember much about the Wreck-It Ralph sequel. I remember it being decent.
Yeah, it was decent. Yeah. Not as good as one.
No, but the first Wreck-It Ralph destroys me every time I see it. Like, that movie makes me...
I think
me
they're both still great movies.
Yeah,
and Zootopia is wonderful. Zootopia is
beautiful, and also it has that fine-ass tiger daddy that I've already talked about.
And you also talked about Jason Bateman's foxes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's a foxy fox.
You love foxes, it turns out.
Hey, look, the new internet fad is called hot rodent boyfriends.
Oh boy.
Which is, you know, like they're all the kind of hot actors these days, like Josh O'Connor, whatever. And what's his face from Saltburn and the Batman and the Eternals. You know the one I'm talking about. The guy. Sorry. Anyways, so the whole point is that they're, you know, like all the
Barry Keoghan.
Yeah, Barry Keoghan. Oh. And also the guy from, good job, and also the guy from The Bear. Like, they're all kind of hot, rodent-y looking dudes, right? And so I read a list of hot rodents, like hot cartoon rodents on Entertainment Weekly this morning. And the only reason I clicked on it, because I was like, I swear to God, if the rat from Fantastic Mr. Fox is not on there, I'm going to riot. But sure enough, he was.
Wow.
Because that is one hot rodent boyfriend right there.
You know your rodents.
I do know intimate hot rodents.
Thomas Newman did the music.
I honest to God thought it was Michael Giacchino until
you looked it up?
Yeah. Because I'd forgotten that it wasn't.
Yeah, but
it was
Thomas, so good. If it sounded familiar, like if the music sounded familiar, it's because before this, in 2003, he did Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
And Finding Nemo and WALL-E do have a similar sound. Yeah. Different scores, of course, but...
No, it is a very similar, like a lot of composers like ethereal, do, you can... Anyway. It's a very beautiful sort of ethereal score that makes my heart so happy.
The man has been working since 1979, and...
Good for fucking you, man.
Other than WALL-E, he did 128 other projects, including... These are at least my favorites, or the ones that I've seen that I... I mean, he's, like I said, 128.
Yeah, he's prolific.
And we don't have time to go through all 128.
Thomas Newman podcast. Go.
And anyway, we got Skyfall, 1917, Elemental, like I said, both Finding Nemo and Dory, Road to Perdition, which has a great soundtrack, The Salton Sea, which has a great soundtrack.
You do love The Salton Sea.
The Green Mile.
Oh my God, The Green Mile is so heartbreaking.
American Beauty, which does have good music.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful...
Micho.
You know what? Honestly, now that you're saying it, and I'm kind of like in my head kind of thinking about all the different scores, he really does have like a sound.
He has a sound.
Yeah.
Like American Beauty, you think about the music in American Beauty, even Meet Joe Black.
Yeah.
And lastly, I was going to say Scent of a Woman, which I've never seen, have always wanted to, but...
I've seen it in passing, and that, I mean, like, my mom... I remember very vividly my mom watching it as I, like, came in and out of the living room as a teenager. You know, like, what are you watching? Scent of a Woman? And I, like, spend 10 minutes watching it and then wander off. Chris O'Donnell. It's pretty good
Chris
in that
O'Donnell
movie.
And...
Al Pacino.
Al Pacino. I always wanted to watch Scent of a Woman because the director also did Midnight Run, Beverly Hills Cop, and Meet Joe Black.
You do love Meet Joe Black.
I do. I've watched, it's a long movie, and I've watched it probably a dozen times.
That's a movie that, when we started dating, lovely listeners, Caveman was like, I need you to watch this movie. I mean, we both came into this relationship as big movie buffs, and we both came into the relationship with movies that the other person, like, had to watch.
Sure.
And for Caveman,
and still
Meet Joe
list.
Black was definitely on that list, and then for me it was like, The Blues Brothers, and it's Madman, Mad Mad World. So, I mean, the list obviously were a lot longer than those three films, but still, like, I remember him sitting me down and being like, we're going to watch Meet Joe Black. And I was like,
Over the years, there have definitely been movies where, wait, you haven't seen that one?
Yeah.
Sit down, shut up, here we go.
What was the one the other day that you were like, oh, you've never seen 1941?
I have never seen 1941.
World War II comedy? That has not aged well. It didn't age well in the 90s when I was watching it. And so I think that if we were to watch it today, it'd be more cringe than anything.
I'm sure it would, but there's...
Oh my God, there's so many funny parts!
I really like Steven Spielberg, and I would like to...
The cast.
He's got so many movies that he's done.
Oh my God, the cast is phenomenal.
I've said it before, it's easier to keep up with a new director who's just starting out than go to a director who's been around for decades and try to catch up on everything they've ever done, which I just don't have the time.
No, but we will make it a point to watch 1941 together soon. Probably very
interesting. And the movie I discovered that you had never seen that was also done by Steven Spielberg was Jaws.
I have never seen Jaws,
yeah. So this is something that needs to be corrected.
Yeah, and we'll work on that. Maybe one
day.
Bonus episode.
It'll be one day.
Yeah.
We'll get to it. As... You may have known, WALL-E is certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
I can't imagine
Big
why.
Big surprise.
Yep.
With a 95% from critics and 90% with audiences.
Only 90%?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it has something to do with... This was the first Pixar movie that really didn't have a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
It was very just watch the beauty. And I think maybe kids and audiences probably just weren't...
Yeah.
I mean, 90% is still high.
You know, so this movie came out, obviously, when we were adults. And I don't... No, we've watched it with our kids, I think.
I think they've both seen it the boy. Once.
Yeah, at the very
it's
least.
It's not that replayable kind of movie that Disney... Them. Not for kids.
No.
And not for our kids.
Finding Nemo was a big movie for our firstborn to watch again and again and again and again and again and again. And again, and again. Just over and over. And Wall-E never fell into that sort of thing with them. They were never like, put on Wall-E. It was... You know, it was Finding Nemo, it was the Muppets with Cinderella and the Little Mermaid. You know, a ton of other films. But you're right, Wall-E is I think, kind of maybe a harder film for kids. I guess I can't say I haven't been a child for some time. But I can see why it would get a 90%. I also could see some people being upset with the way that humans are portrayed in this film. But we'll get to that.
We'll talk about that as well. Wall-E was made for $180 million, which is $5 million less than The Dark Knight.
Wow. I mean, I guess it kind of helps that their top two characters aren't famous actors. You know, Wall-E and Eve are not voiced by...
No, not you know, voiced by you know, big like, names.
No.
The movie made $532 million worldwide, which isn't bad for an animation.
That's pretty great.
And another $170 million on physical media.
Which makes sense, because and I know that we went out and bought it right away.
Only 1.5 million of that went to Blu-ray sales of the 170. Wow. Yeah, the rest was all DVD. Yeah, that's a lot of...
That's a lot of DVDs.
That's a lot of DVDs. Yeah. 2008. It did win an Oscar for Best Animated Film.
Yes, which, how could it not? It went up against Kung Fu Panda and another film that, you know...
I remember that year, and I was like, Kung Fu Panda better not win.
Yeah, right. Because Kung Fu Panda is like a fun movie.
It's a fun movie.
You know, Wall-E is a piece of art.
Right. That was my feeling going in, too, because Kung Fu Panda is a fine movie, and I know people love that series.
And the first one, especially, was a lot of fun. And another quick add-up for Wall-E is that in 2021, the film was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress.
Cool.
So in 2001, it was put into the, or excuse me, in 2021, it was put into the Library of Congress. And in 2022, it became the first Disney film to be added to the Criterion Collection.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is
what year
quite
did
impressive.
That get put into the Criterion?
2022.
Wow. First one.
Yeah.
Of all Disney's projects that they've, like, I would have expected like a classic, like Sleeping Beauty
or Cinderella.
Snow White.
Yeah.
Like something that put Disney on the map.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Wall-E is such a beautiful film. And it might be because I know the Criterion Collection prides itself on preservation.
But also quality of the film.
But I'm just saying, maybe they couldn't get to, like, Cinderella or Snow White because they don't have, like, the highest quality of prints. If that makes sense. Like, sure. Wall-E was made...
But I think there are, like, restorations that have now been...
Well, maybe they're working on it, but I think it's pretty cool that Wall-E was the
first. That's cool. Good job, Criterion.
Like,
good job, Wall-E.
The Library of Congress makes total sense. You know, they pick a handful of films every year.
It's harder to get into the Criterion than it is the Library of Congress.
It's a lot harder, especially for Disney, apparently.
Especially for Disney, yeah. So the cast, like you said, was not... like an A-tier kind of cat. We've talked about this when we did Ratatouille, and compared it to like a movie like Surf's Up, where they were using big cast names. And
well, I mean, look at Kung Fu Panda. It's got Jack Black and Angelina Jolie as their two main...
Jackie Chan.
Yeah, like, it's a huge film with huge voice actors.
Big names.
And the top four people on IMDb for this film are like...
Playing Wall-E, we've got Ben Burtt, who was, if you don't recognize that name, he has been a sound guy
forever.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who Ben Burtt is at this point, like, why are you listening to this podcast?
he created Chewbacca's sound.
Yeah, he created all this sound effects for Star Wars.
He even created Yoda's voice, which Frank Oz actually did the voice, but Ben Burtt is also credited for helping with mm-hmm. that process, getting Yoda's voice.
Yeah, Ben Burtt has done 1,000 projects. He is a true Hollywood master at sound effects.
Yeah, sound effects, not even voice acting.
So, for the longest time, you know, and even still, but for the longest time, if you had an animal in any sort of animation film, it was Frank Welker. And these days, it's Dee Bradley Baker, who's the voice of both Perry the Platypus and all the clones in the Clone Wars. You know, there are these prolific guys in Hollywood that do incredible things on everything that you love. Ben Burtt is one of them.
Not only did he do voices and do sound,
mm-hmm.
but he was also the editor of Star Wars episodes 1-3.
Ooh.
I saw that and I was like, really? The editor?
We might need to talk to him about some of those choices.
I really like half of his career.
yeah, the sound stuff's great.
The sound stuff's great. Thank you for Chewbacca's roar.
Mm-hmm. And the lightsaber noise.
And everything. Everything you've done for Star Wars. This is just for Ben Burtt. Thank you, Ben Burtt, for everything you've done.
Well done.
Yes, great job. Alyssa Knight played Eve.
Who is a Pixar employee, much like some of the voices, actually in all the Pixar films.
She's been doing voices, additional voices for mm-hmm. Pixar since 2006. And yeah, is now works at Pixar Studios as an administrator.
God, I want to work at Pixar as an administrator.
Right?
That'd be so. I got a cute Pixar voice. I can do cute baby voices. I don't know.
Elmo. Fire me. I'm ready. Got Elmo and Donald Duck can talk to each other all day. You got Jeff Garlin as the captain.
Yeah.
Fred Willard, may he rest in peace, as BNL CEO,
mm-hmm.
by and large, of course. And then you can't forget John Ratzenberger as the...
No, he's got to be in it. He's
got to be in every Pixar film. And the always beautiful and always talented Sigourney Weaver.
Mommy!
Which I think this is a perfect time, Maggie, for you to tell
Yay!
The audience about your experience at the WALL-E premiere.
Yeah, So back in 2008, when this movie premiered, it was kind of around Memorial Day, if I remember correctly. And it was a 3-day weekend. It was a holiday weekend. And my friend Christy, you know, called me up and went, hey, do you want to come to a premiere with us tomorrow night? And I went, a premiere? Like a movie premiere? And she went, yeah, a movie premiere. My dad got tickets to the WALL-E premiere, and we need a fourth person to go with us. Do you want to come with? And I was like, oh, fuck yeah. I mean, I had seen the trailers for this film. I knew it was going to be great. I was absolutely down. It turns out that Disney had sent a bunch of tickets to local Southern California Army bases for the premiere because, you know, they wanted to support our armed forces and give them something kind of special to take part in. But because it was a holiday weekend, you know, there was nobody on base to go. And my friend's father, who was in the military, was able to score, you know, a handful of tickets. And he, you know, wanted to take his two kids and they wanted to take me. So we drove down to the Greek Theater in Hollywood. You know, we parked. We got to walk the sort of rust orange carpet. The carpet was kind of rust orange for Mars, basically. And they had, like, a recreation of the Mars rover on it. And they had a bunch of, like, debris and stuff that, you know, the cubes that WALL-E built. They had an actual WALL-E. You know, a full life-size robotic WALL-E there. And we were nobodies, right? Like, we walked down the carpet and nobody paid any attention to us whatsoever, which totally makes sense. And we went and got into our seats kind of well before all the famous people showed up. And I remember that there was, like, a band, you know, if you've ever been to the Greek Theater, it's this beautiful, big, outdoor amphitheater in Hollywood. It's a stunning place. And there was a band playing in the corner who I, you know, I could not tell you who they were, but we were thinking that they were whoever had been, like, the big thing on American Idol at the time. I saw so many famous people in the crowd. I mean, I got to see John Ratzenberger walked past me. I got to see Kathy Najimy was there. I saw Kevin Smith and his wife and his daughter, Harley Quinn, kind of from across the theater. And we happened to get really good seats, like kind of right up front in the second row of seats. And y'all know what I'm talking about there, right? There's always the front row of theater seats, or the front selection, a section of theater seats, and then like an aisle to walk through, and then the back. And so we were in the front row of that second part. Universally known as some of the best movie theater seats you can have, because, you know, the most.
It's the ones I always go for when I'm booking a seat.
Yeah. So we're sitting there. And I'm, you know, I'm pointing out all of these people that I'm super excited to see. And my friends are like, don't go talk to anyone. And I'm like, well, why not? And they're like, because, you know, why? Like, they kind of didn't understand why I would want to go up to any of these people and say hi. So I felt like I kind of couldn't. But it was really a neat experience to see all these famous people at this movie premiere. And then Sigourney Weaver walks by. And I, look, I grew up on Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters played in my house basically every single day when I was a child, because my brother watched it nonstop. I have loved Galaxy Quest since I've seen it. You know, I don't like the alien movies because they scare me, and I'm a wimp, but I highly respect them. You know, Sigourney Weaver has been just a part of my life forever, right? And Sigourney Weaver, you know, 17 feet tall, Amazon goddess, walks past me, and my jaw is on the fucking ground. And then she turns and she sits two rows behind us. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I have to go say something. And my friends were like, don't. Just leave her alone. She doesn't want to hear that you left her in Ghostbusters. She hates Ghostbusters. And I was like, I don't care, I'm doing it anyway. So I got up, and because of how the seats were, there was sort of like, I was at the end of the aisle, and then she was directly behind me sitting down, you know, because the seats went in a little bit. And I walked up to her, and she was sitting, and I was in heels, and I said, excuse me, you know, Sigourney Weaver, Mrs. Weaver, I'm a big fan, and I just really wanted to come over and say hello and shake your hand. And she was incredibly gracious. She touched this hand that I'm waving in Caveman's face right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
As you do when you shake hands.
Yes. She touched my body, and because I was in heels and she was sitting, I actually, like, knelt in front of her like she's, you know, the queen of the nerds, because she is. And she held my hand, and she was like, oh my God, thank you. What's your name? And are you excited to see the film? And so we just talked for a couple minutes, right? And I was just like, I've loved you since I was a kid. I've been a huge fan for a really long time. I just had to come up and say that I adore you. And she was like, thank you so much. That's really sweet. I appreciate hearing that. You know, what do you know about this movie? And I was like, next to nothing, but I'm very excited to see it. She's like, oh, I can't wait to hear what you think about it. You're going to love it. Right. So we had a little few minute conversation. I returned to my seat. I am floating above my seat because I've just touched the queen of the nerds, Sigourney Weaver. And then we watched the movie, and it was incredible, you know, and I cried the whole time. And she is the voice of the computer, right? She is an active voice of this film. And I could hear her laughing behind me because she was, you know, 6 feet from me. I could, like, hear her laughing at sometimes. And I was just very self-conscious that, like, Sigourney Weaver was sitting behind me watching a movie. And so when the movie ended and everybody was getting up and kind of, like, working their way out of the venue, I kind of had to stop because her husband was standing and he was sort of in my way from exiting down the stairs. And so Sigourney looked at me and she went, so what did you think? And I went, oh my God, I loved it so much. And she's like, I knew you would. I'm so glad you liked it. And I was like, you did a great job. It's so beautiful. Like, I'm crying, you know. And she was just like, oh, I'm so glad. And, like, just the most gracious, lovely human being I've ever met. And again, like, just floated out of the Greek on cloud nine. I can't tell you. Like, I remember seeing Brad Garrett there. And I remember seeing, you know, I remember seeing people, like, famous people at this thing, but I kind of only remember Sigourney Weaver because, you know, she was incredibly gracious and kind. So yeah, that's my WALL-E movie sort of trivia, is that I got to go to the premiere and it was absolutely awesome. It was the second movie premiere that I went to. We also got a chance to go to the X-Files sequel film. I think it was called the first one's called Fight the Future. I don't even remember what the second one's called. It's an absolute abortion of a movie. We did get to go to that premiere and actually see the movie inside with the stars, and we sat next to the alien bounty hunter while we watched the film. The terrible, terrible movie that was, and I'm not surprised that everybody in the cast kind of fled the movie theater as soon as it started, because it was dog shit. But it was still a very fun day with friends, and yeah, I've shaken Sigourney Weaver's hand And I will never let anyone forget that.
I'm jealous because Sigourney Weaver and Michelle Pfeiffer are two of my favorite actresses from the 90s.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, major 90s crushes.
And I would... I don't know what I would have done if I got to shake Sigourney Weaver's hand.
I did find a kind of blurry picture of Sigourney Weaver at the premiere of WALL-E, so in the outfit that I remember her wearing. So I will be posting that on our social medias when the time comes, and I'll be like, I touched this woman on this day.
So WALL-E opens up with Put On Your Sunday Clothes from the musical from 1969, Hello, Dolly.
Mm-hmm. Which I've never seen.
Never seen it. Nope. I know it has Barbra Streisand in it. Mm-hmm. That's about it. Also,
Walter Matthau.
Yeah. I like the music from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the music that they used for this movie was very pretty. Very and cute, hearing WALL-E whistle the theme. The movie kind of starts off with just showing you how bleak and empty and humanless and lifeless the planet Earth has become.
Earth has been left behind, you know, just a shit ton of trash, just so much. Huge piles that are taller than the skyscrapers in the cities, and, you know, everything's got the By and Large logo on it, which is, you know, for the fact that it was 2008, is kind of funny because, like, Disney itself has become a bit of a By and Large these days.
Disney has. We've got places like Amazon.
Amazon is totally one.
I think when I
Walmart
first,
to an extent,
well, still. I think when I first watched By and Large, I was comparing it to, or when I was first watching WALL-E, I was comparing By and Large to places like Walmart and Costco.
You know, those huge buildings.
But now it's like Amazon.
Yeah, definitely. Disney.
Disney, of course. Yeah.
And, you know, just these kind of conglomerate places. And, you know, we're introduced to WALL-E, just the sweetest, softest, most perfect little himbo to ever exist. He is so pure. WALL-E is as pure than the undriven snow. That little sweet man deserves the entire world. He deserves the whole world to be at his fingertips. And that's kind of what it is, because he's the only one there. It's just him and his little cockroach friend. Hal, that's the name of the cockroach.
Hal.
And, you know, he just goes about his day doing his job, which is compacting trash into little cubes and then using those cubes to kind of build up big towers of trash, essentially. And because he's been going at it for so long by himself, he even passes at one point kind of a WALL-E graveyard of all of his other robot brethren who were long since stopped working. You know, it's just WALL-E, and he collects cute little things, and he's, you know, after years of being alone, he's kind of developed a sentience, a bit of a soul. It's really beautiful to see him. The montages of, like, WALL-E discovering things are so precious and cute. But this is his life, day in and day out. As he wakes up, he gets some sun and some energy. He goes about, you know, collecting trash and stacking trash, and then he goes home to his little, you know, his little truck that he lives in that's absolutely filled with clutter and things and
organized.
Collectibles.
He's an organized,
it is a very organized order. Yeah. Yes. You know, he's got 18 to 73 different By and Large lighters, and he's got spare parts to fix himself with, which kind of makes you wonder, you know, how much of the original WALL-E is still working there.
No, I get it. Like, how much of WALL-E is actually, especially by the end.
Especially when by the end,
So many parts of him were replaced. And that's the thing, he started off, I mean, we'll get there, but he kind of started off of just being back to a WALL-E robot.
And not
less
WALL-E.
Yeah, less
sweet boy.
WALL-E with all that great personality.
And so he's just kind of a lonely little guy. He just wants to find somebody that he can hold hands with.
He's obsessed with watching Hello, Dolly. Mm-hmm. And
he likes the dancing. In fact, he even saves a hubcap so that he could use it as a straw hat in one of the dance scenes, and he dances around his little home. It's so sweet.
This is Pixar's first and last time they've ever used live action in a movie.
I can't off the top of my head remember any other time that Pixar has used live action actors and elements in its movies. other than this. But we could be very wrong, and the internet does not seem to be helping us. So if you feel like we have gotten this factoid wrong, please let us know at moviemingle@gmail.com.
You know, when I was reminded when Wally goes to the roof of his little shack in the morning, because he's all drained, and I love how, because he's drained of energy, he's acting like he just woke up and can't move around.
Yeah, he's very much like stumbling like somebody towards the coffee pot.
But as soon as he gets outside and recharges, it makes the noise that Apple computers made. And I had just seen this bit on Instagram of the guy who came up with that tone for Apple computers. He did it without permission. They had already chosen what they were going to use, and he didn't like it. So he started discovering or experimenting with different tones, and he threw that one in there without them knowing.
Oh, my goodness. There is a lot of Apple sort of imagery in this film. Of course, Eve herself is a very sleek, early 2000s Apple product, right? Sleek lines, very beautiful. She was actually designed by somebody from, you know, or co-designed by somebody from Apple Industries, who also helped, you know, design iPods and things. Whereas, like, Wally himself is kind of like an old school, like, dumpy Mac, you know, original Mac. Eve is very much like a new, sleek, modern, like, iMac.
It's funny you bring that up, because this movie came out almost a year to the date. It was 2 days short of being a year to the date after the iPhone 1 was introduced.
Oh my god.
And so it almost feels like this movie was a warning.
It very much was, again, yeah.
Like, because of not just Apple phones or smartphones, but also the internet in general.
Yeah, and what it kind of does to human beings. That was something that I was kind of wondering about. So, like, all of humans have left Earth. They've left Earth on these giant ships. I believe there is more than just one. Because I can't imagine that all of humanity fit on the Axiom.
Sure.
In fact, they even say that, you know, they've got ships leaving daily. So humanity is put on these giant, sort of luxurious space cruise liners and sent into the stars and told that in 5 years we'll have cleaned the Earth up enough so that you can come back and we can live on the planet again. 700 years later, they're still floating in space. And they are out there in space, too. It is not like they are just hovering Earth. They are fucking in another galaxy, it seems, or at least at the very edge of the Milky Way. You know, like, the whole point is that they can, you know, people can, like, live in luxury on this cruise, and if grandma's having a hard time getting around, they've got hover chairs that she can sit in, and everything is fun, and everything's given to you, and everything's perfect. And there, I had two thoughts, which were, I wonder if any humans were left on Earth, and if so, what happened to them?
They're all in vaults,
or, you know, Australia is just having its own Mad Max insanity, right? Fucking Furiosa's down there kicking ass 17 different ways from yesterday, and Wally's, you know, up in New York compacting trash, right? Like, who's to say what the rest of the world looks like? And secondly, who got to get on those ships? Was it just rich people? Like, if that happened tomorrow, would our little family get to go on?
No,
that
I'm sure it was a cost.
How much did it cost?
They even had that commercial of, like, book your book your spot today.
So was it all the people that live on the Axiom or just a bunch of, like, fucking rich Nepo babies? Like, you know, who decided who got to go on that? Was it everybody or just some people? And then I was like, if I get too into these two strains of thought, I'm not going to pay attention to Wally. So I shut that side of my brain down and went, nope, we're just going to focus
real
on
deep into it.
A soft golden retriever boyfriend that is Wally.
Wally's design, I know I'm not the first person to think this, but I really think Wally's design was based off of Johnny Five from the Short Circus movies.
According to Andrew Santin, it was unintentional at best.
Ooh, they look so similar. Yeah. Like the treads for wheels, the eyes, the look of the eyes is exactly the same. Johnny Five is just a little bit taller.
I personally hate Short Circuit.
Oh, I love Johnny. Of course, I haven't seen it since I was
very young.
Very, very young. Yeah. And I know, you know, there's controversy with Fisher Stevens' character.
Mm-hmm. For me, for that movie, it was one of those films that, like, my dad and my brothers would put on and they loved, but I was always just like, ugh, this is a boy movie, I don't like it, meh. Then I'd go in my room and play with my dolls or listen to Robin Williams on vinyl, which are two drastically different things, but I did both of those things as a child.
It makes so much sense that you would watch or listen to that rather than
playing watching.
Yeah. Robin Williams and dolls versus Short Circuit. Yep. I think you made the better choice.
I think I did too. Mai Tai, Polynesian word for dumb fuck. So the first time we see Eve, she is a literal angel sent from above. This absolute glowing beacon of modern technology. Sleek, egg-shaped design. You know, her arms and her head kind of extend outward from her body and sort of hover. Oh, they're not fully connected. It is love at first sight for Wally. He is obsessed with Eve the second he sees her. Because, I mean, up until this point in the movie, too, she's the most beautiful thing that we have seen. For all the beauty and the desolation of this planet that, you know, you're watching, it's very brown, it's very red, rusty, and old. Here comes Eve, just this absolute fucking glowing goddess. You see her for the first time, and obviously she is aesthetically beautiful. But then as soon as the ship leaves and she's alone, all of a sudden she gets to be herself. And the sentience of the robots in Wall-E is something that I absolutely adore. I love that, like, for the human beings, they're almost the robots because they're just floating around on these chairs, you know, going about their daily lives. Everything is done for them. Everything is given to them. They want for nothing and they complain about everything. All the robots are like actual living beings with personalities and souls and differences. And when you get to see Eve spread her wings and fly for the first time, it's so beautiful. And then of course Tom Newman's score picks up and, you know, we're watching her through Wally's eyes and it's love at first sight. She's just absolutely stunning. And he is just such a fucking puppy dog when he comes to her. Like, he is desperately, utterly in love with her. And I would like to know what Wally would look like as a human being, because I think he'd be this big sort of brick of a guy, kind of broad shoulders, big broad body, who's just hopelessly dorky, utterly, no, very, very little brains, very smart, but somehow very few brains between his ears. You know, a very smart, smooth brain. Wally is not stupid by any means, but he's not that smart. Like, yeah, like this, the fact that he creates a statue for her when she's asleep and he makes art for her. This guy is in love and it's beyond precious. This is a better love story than any of the Twilight books ever could have been. And in fact, his little ta-da is so, oh my god, he's so cute. We do skip over slightly that Wally finds a plant. Although, how a plant is growing inside of an old 1950s refrigerator that seems to be pretty, like, locked down and shut tight, I'm not quite sure. But Wally discovers a plant, puts that plant and its root systems inside of a boot, and that kind of becomes the thing that propels his story forward, is, you know, this plant and what it means for humanity.
One of my favorite songs that they played, and there may not be many others used except until the end of the film, but
no,
in the middle of
the
film.
No, this is the only other song that is played outside of.
Yeah, La Vie en Rose, as sung by Louis Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite Louis Armstrong song.
Yes.
Second place would probably be What a Wonderful World, but La Vie en Rose, his version of it.
No, it's so pretty.
So pretty.
Especially, and now because I kind of associate that version of that song with Wally, whenever I hear it, I just think of, I think of our sweet, sweet soft boy and our badass girl and their cute little love affair. If any of you watched Our Flag Means Death, the most perfect little gay show about pirates to ever exist, you'll know that Izzy Hand sang La Vie en Rose on one episode, and I play that particular version of him singing that song a lot in my daily life because it is also perfect. And then next week when we do Inception, that song's going to come to play again. But it's going to be the original version by Edith
Piaf.
Yes. That song has a big thing, or a big kind of plot line in Inception, which I'm pretty sure is the next movie we have to watch for Nolan Fest.
Nolan Fest. Another thing about EVE, first of all, it stands for Extraterrestrial Vegetation Evaluator. She's very much like the Terminator.
Yes.
In the beginning, the way she slowly goes around scanning things, the environment looks like the you just replace some of that garbage with human skulls, and it's very Terminator-esque. And then there's the moment with when the dust storm is coming through and they have to escape. It reminded me, even though
when Wally grabs
her hand and says, "Come with me if you want to live," pulling her into safety.
You know, I noticed that we both wrote down the moment that he grabs her hand because, you know, up until this point, one of the things we know about Wally is that he wants to hold somebody's hand.
Right.
You know, he wants to hold his lover's hand, which is so sweet. And, you know, this giant dust storm comes by and Eve is lost and she's screaming out for Wally. And so he grabs her hand, and that's the first time they actually do hold hands. But it's more of, you know, safety
and necessity than romantic.
Yeah, and he leads her back to his little home and then shows her all of his treasures, which she proceeds to break a lot of.
Which, that really bothers me as a kind of, like, a collector.
As a collector.
And just all the shit I have. Some of it I do really like. And if people come over and they want to, like, handle stuff, I'm like, oh, don't touch that. Oh, put it back. Oh. Well, especially, like, my kids' friends, when they come over and they start being a little nosy and a little curious.
Yeah, you're like, hello, hey, look at their hands.
Could you stop?
I know that's a toy, but don't touch it.
Yeah, no toys for kids.
Well, you know, but she also, she doesn't understand her strength.
No, I get why she does it, but
and
still hit me.
you're like, damn it. He loved that egg beater. He loved it so much.
or the especially the VHS tape that she starts taking the tape out of it.
Yeah, she starts to unravel and his little panic about trying to get it.
I love how he rewinds it because we all know how to rewind a VHS tape if you don't have a VCR at the moment.
No, we don't all know that. Okay, man, you and I know that.
It's true.
Some of the babies listening here don't know what a VHS is. They wouldn't know how a pencil is the perfect tool if you ever have a cassette tape that's unwound. Some things just generations...
Or how to record over a VHS movie.
That already has the tabs broken off.
Yeah.
The things we know.
Don't matter anymore because they don't make them anymore.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if VHS kind of had a resurgence.
There are still VHS collectors.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, new movies aren't sold on VHS, but...
I mean, like, I have a... You know, a young friend that collects CDs. And I'm just like, why?
I have a small VHS collection. It's mainly the original Star Wars trilogy, the original Indiana Jones trilogy.
A couple handful of, special things.
It made me smile when we saw the first time you see the Rubik's Cube and it's all mixed up.
Yes.
And the camera pans to the right. And then when it pans back to Eve, she's solved it
in short amount of time.
And it made me smile because our son loves solving Rubik's Cubes.
Our son is really good at solving
Rubik's
Cubes.
He's really good at it.
He's very fast at it. And
he's getting faster and faster. And
don't understand it.
It's funny because he doesn't like me mixing it up. So if it's solved, he hides it. And then I'll find it and re-scramble it so that he has to solve it again.
It is funny that he made us buy it for him. And then, oh, look, there it is. It's right there.
Yep, it's all scrambled.
It's all scrambled.
It's hiding in a bookshelf right now, but it's scrambled. So one day
he's so upset.
One day he'll see it and be like, Dad.
And then the other thing, too, is that we get to see the literal spark of the flame of love that exists between Wally and Eve when she uses the lighter in front of him.
Right.
And it sparks up. That's, you know, that's the moment that they both kind of fall. And it's very sweet. But then he shows her the plan, and her directive is to... Her directive is to find plants and, you know, bring them back to the ship to prove that life is habitable on Earth again.
Yes, she is a vegetarian evaluator,
so... And so she, you know, she takes the plant into her body, into a little, like, stasis bubble, shuts down completely.
Now turns back into an egg.
Just an egg, yeah. And...
Her?
I love you so much. You're just my favorite person in the world, and I love you so much.
That's a deep cut.
That's a deep cut.
If you know what the answer is, email us at movieminglepod@gmail.com.
You know, his dismay at essentially losing her, especially right when they're connecting. Because up until this point, anytime he tried to connect with her, she was like, oh, this fucking guy. But I guess he's kindly finally worn her down. And, you know, like there's the spark of love has literally been ignited. And now she's just this floating egg. And he's very distraught at it, but he continues to care for her.
He's so caring for
First, he thinks that maybe she just needs some, you know, solar power, so he takes her outside. It is kind of established that she has the power to, like, illuminate light bulbs just by touching them. And he uses Christmas lights kind of as a lasso or a leash to sort
drag
of
her around.
Drag her around. And the lights that are wrapped around her body are lit up, but the lights that are on the cord, you know, that he's holding, that
aren't quite touching her.
Yeah, are not. Which I think is such a cute little moment. He protects her from windstorms and rainstorms. He gets struck by lightning for her. He takes her out to look, even though she's not really there anymore, he takes her out to look at a beautiful sunset and to sit next to her and try to hold her hand. But that doesn't work either because her body sort of snaps back. So the ship comes down to take Eve and the plant back into space, and Wally just cannot let his catatonic egg girlfriend go. So he latches onto the side of the ship and goes off on quite the adventure. And one of the very striking images of this movie is seeing Earth surrounded by satellites.
Yeah, just
like such a thick layer of satellites
breaks through them all.
Yeah, kind of affecting even how the sun can penetrate. And the ship breaks through all of them. But the last satellite that we see is also the first satellite to ever exist, which is Sputnik.
Sputnik 1 from 1957.
And that's kind of a cute little moment. And then you get to watch Wally experience space. I've gone on record as being a huge space nerd. I don't know a lot about it, but I just find it really fucking beautiful.
So fascinating.
It's so...
The things that I find out.
Yeah, the things that exist out there.
That's a thing.
And then just watching Pixar do space, you know, it's space, and it's somehow more beautiful than you could ever imagine because it's Pixar's space, right? When they go through the planet rings and Wally's dragging his hand through them and all these little rocks are spiraling around, the image pretty of the sunburst coming out of the sun. It gets such a beautiful, beautiful moment. And of course, the music's swelling and it's, you know, Interstellar could never. And yet they did, and they did it beautifully too. But still, it's just such an incredible vision and an incredible like love that they put into how space looks. Pixar doesn't fuck around. They didn't these days. It's kind of hard to say, but you know, Pixar,
they put the time and the details into
the love,
not
the
just
science,
into the pictures, the animation, but also the story.
Mm-hmm. The ship docks with the Axiom, one of the, you know, the big flagship of the by and large space fleet, if you will. And there we get to meet my favorite character in this whole film. Mo. This teeny tiny little robot whose entire purpose is to clean foreign contaminant off of, you know, people, off of machines.
Yeah.
And this, you know, him meeting Wally, who is nothing but a giant walking foreign contaminant, breaks Mo's brain so much that he escapes from his everyday routine in order to clean up after him on the ship.
He literally has to jump off of his track that tells him where to go every day. And
yes.
He's like, I need to
clean. He's like, the urge to clean
foreign
is more than, you know, his built-in program. Which, a lot of this movie shows how irrational feelings can break through even programming, right? Like, irrational love is what is the reason that Eve is so protective of Wally, right? She loves him. And Mo's irrational need to clean literally breaks him out of his day-to-day
robotic
programming.
Wally really does a good job of breaking everybody out of their
Wally
program.
Changes every single person or robot that he meets.
That he comes into
every
contact
single
with
one that he comes in contact with, he changes for the better. I guess with the exception of Otto, but Otto's a
well,
dick anyways. So.
He's the villain of the movie.
It's really sweet because it shows how acts of kindness can change somebody. You know, he waves to a computer whose only job is to press buttons And Wally waves to this computer, and the computer waves back. And all of a sudden, that computer's life is better because somebody waved at him. Like, it's a really beautiful message of kindness and always being kind to the people that you meet. Because you never know when those little moments of kindness can change somebody's life. You know, he bumps into John and Mary, breaks them literally out of their technological comas that they're in. And all of a sudden, they not only do they find love, but they find purpose and they find the beauty in what's around them. And they discover things that they didn't know, like, oh my God, this ship has a pool? Like, they didn't know that.
This pool has a track?
Yeah, like, it's, you know, Wally makes everybody's lives better just by being
just by being him. By saying hi.
But I do wonder, because, like, we see babies, you know, in this world. So how does sex work?
Yeah, they don't go. It's a kids' movie.
What?
I'm not going to go into
but
it.
But I need to know.
Well, like, they're either...
Are there baby farms? Or do couples actually have sex? Or is it all robotic?
You know, it might be. There might be a baby farm, because people definitely do not look like they do anything.
No.
Other than sit in their chair, eat food, and watch videos.
So does, like, a dude, like, jizz into a robot, and then the robot goes and impregnates a baby?
Once again, it's a kids' film. And there's no reason to go into it.
I need to know. There's got to be fan fiction out there somewhere that explains it.
Probably.
Somebody get Pete Docter on the phone.
So, like we said earlier, this movie definitely had an idea of what a future could be like with the way technology was going, the direction it was going, to make us just a little bit more lazy and...
A little.
Oh boy. Well, if you're stuck in space...
Yeah. You don't have the Federation to run around and play with.
There's not much to do.
Yeah, there's no
I mean, there's a lot to do, because they do seem like they're occupied every day.
Yeah. So look,
it looks like a nice vacation spot. I mean, a pool.
On the one hand.
A lot of food service, a lot of... Yeah.
I mean, all your meals are just sludge that you drink in a cup, and everything's done for you.
But just like some vacations or trips that you might take, you know, when you're looking at your phone the majority of the time and not looking at your surroundings.
You're missing everything.
You know, when I was a kid, when we were kids, both of our families, our parents, road trips would definitely would rather us be, instead of, like...
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of times my parents would be like, read a book, and so I'd read a book. But at the same time, also look out your...
Staring out the window.
Look out your window, because that's the country going by, and, you know, it's not something you get to see very often, especially in the busy...
My dad wouldn't let us have any sort of computer games, so, like, although my mom smuggled a Game Boy in underneath his nose, like, even on long trips, it was still something that we didn't have... But Travis was playing with it, and I couldn't. You know, you're kind of stuck staring out the window, and I used to be better at reading in cars when I was younger, but nowadays I can barely, like, if I'm trying to read something to Caveman while he's driving, I get so incredibly nauseous by reading in a car. It's just fucked with me too much. Back in the day, you didn't have... If we took a road trip now, both our kids would be plugged into
their
phones.
Their nose would be in their phones the entire time.
And they'd be missing out on sort of the grand beauty of...
And they kind
of
show that when the couple, or at least, the couple are broken.
Yeah, when John from and Mary are kind of free.
Yeah, and they're able to, you know, she's looking out the window into space and just realizing how beautiful the stars are.
Yeah.
For the first time
getting
of her life.
Getting to see Wally and Eve dance around and define dancing. You know,
it's just an interesting message coming from 2008 about don't let life pass you by
because you're staring at a screen
or on the internet or whatever you're doing,
which is hard because sometimes you just like to go into your phone and not come out for a few hours, but it's also not the smartest thing to do. I have to admit, on the one hand, like, that sort of life looks pretty legit. Like, I would take a week of just floating around.
A week,
and
sure. A vacation away from life.
But I would also want good food, though, right? Like,
We're not in space, so maybe we would get good food instead of sludge.
So, like, on the one hand, like, I could see me just accepting that fate and just being one of those giant baby blobs floating around space, not knowing anything about life, and just having everything handed to me, like, yeah, that kind of sounds nice, but I'm also a clog in a capitalist machine that is slowly killing me from the inside out, and yeah, I would like to take a week off to just not have to think about doing anything, including apparently pooping, because who knows even how they take care of that.
Once again, kids' movie.
I need to know. Doctor, tell me. But yeah, like, so on the one hand, I'm like, oh, that looks really nice. But on the other hand, truly, in my heart of hearts, I just want to be a hobbit, just in a garden.
Now, hobbit life.
I want it so badly.
You know, there are these things on Instagram sometimes where they're like, would you live in this house? And it shows, like, a house on an island surrounded by water.
Yeah.
Or a cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
It was like, would you live here for a year without the internet or your phone and just live out here
for, like, $500 million
for a year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
in
yeah,
a heartbeat.
Yeah, in a heartbeat. You don't even have to give me money.
No.
If
just
like,
pay for me to be out there.
Pay for, you know, the food. Yeah, pay for me to be out there. Pay for my time away from work.
All the books that we would need to, you know, to homeschool our kids.
Just give me books and records, and I'd probably have I think I'd have a great year.
Oh, God, I'd be so happy. I'd be so bored, and I'd be so happy. I'd take my watercolors and my writing.
Yeah.
Like, let me take at least a computer so I could, like, type, but it doesn't have to be connected to the internet, right?
That's fair.
I'm like, I don't want to actually handwrite and everything.
I mean, the idea was also to break you away from screens, so, like, no movies or TV, but...
But why do you get records?
Take a typewriter.
Yeah. Who even uses typewriters
records,
anyway?
Records are not a screen.
Because you can see yourself in them. But no, I just want the life of a hobbit. I want to be... Just in a little town with everybody who knows way too much about my business. I want to be in the gardens. I want to be planting potatoes. I want to be chilling with fucking Pippin and getting hammered every night. And it's just socially acceptable to take naps. Like, that's my dream existence. I'm so tired of this world that we live in. And I hope that in the next one, I can just go be a hobbit.
Or cat.
Yeah. I mean, producer Robin's got it pretty sweet right now.
Something else I wanted to talk about was from the time that since this movie has come out, it's been pointed to that the characters, because they're a little overweight, for you know, their bone density has it's not great because they've been in space so long, but also they don't do anything.
No.
They sit in a chair all day looking at a screen eating food.
Yeah.
So I personally, I don't think this movie was body shaming or fat shaming.
No,
I think they're showing you what happens when all you do is sit in a chair looking at a screen, eating a bunch of food.
It's more and cause don't exercise. And not effect. Or it's, effect and not
there's
cause.
There's definitely some mental and physical health issues going on in this spaceship.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of it was just like...
It wasn't done out of cruelty or malice.
No. I think it was just...
Like, this is what
could happen. This is what happens.
And I think that some people, obviously, people did take umbrage with that. I do remember that being a big thing when this movie came out. People were like, oh, how dare they make fun of me and my existence? And it's like, that's not the point. They're not making fun of you. They're just pointing out that, like, if human beings
were... not the healthiest thing.
Yeah, like, this isn't healthy, and this is what human beings would succumb to if everything was just easily handed to you.
Sure.
Right? Like, you have to put in the effort yourself if you want to change, which...
It's a lot of work.
So, of course, the main plot of the film is getting this plant to a particular section of the Axiom ship so that they can return back to Earth and once again recolonize the planet and, you know, live as human beings were meant to live on Earth again. And the autopilot doesn't want that to happen because the autopilot has been instructed by Fred Willard 705 years ago that, you know, there's no hope for Earth and to just stay in space because that is quote unquote easier. There's a lot of morality there and there's a big discussion that we could have about that. But ultimately, you know, if we really wanted to talk about population control and quelling and how old could you get on the ships and then how are babies made anyway, blah, 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 blah. The ultimate point of this movie is that human beings want to survive, and they will do whatever it takes to survive, including rising up against their robot overlords, finding a way to come home, right? You know, it's are humans even humans if they aren't born on Earth? There's a lot to be discussed there, but that's, honestly, we don't have the time for that sort of conversation. And, and none of it really even matters anyways, because when Wally sits down on a chair and pulls his little treads up with his hands and wiggles them, waiting for Eve to sit down next to him, it's the cutest thing in the world, and I can't stand it. So, yeah, it's the themes and the morality of Wally are very interesting, and they are very beautiful, but ultimately, this movie is also about love. and the way that love and acceptance and kindness can change people. It hurts my soul when Wally gets hurt. And Wally gets hurt. That poor boy gets the shit kicked out of him a couple of times. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is when the giant Wallas, which are the giant Wallies on the space station that are there to do the exact same thing, which is to compact trash and shove it out into space, which, that's such a human being thing to do. To be like, oh, we've got all this trash, where are we going to put it? Space. Right? Like, that part is so ridiculous and so human. You know, Wally has been absolutely just crushed by Otto, and, you know, he's lying there in bits and pieces, struggling, and Eve's trying to protect him, and Mo is there too, trying to clean him, and the Wallas are standing, these giant versions of Wally are standing over at their huge floodlights on this little tiny, you know, family, essentially. I just think that's such a beautiful shot, and I love that moment in the film, because even, it shows that even the Wallas are kind of changed by the appearance and by the life that is Wally.
Another kind of connection that this movie has was because the director, Stanton, who is a Christian,
mm-hmm.
Eve, his name is Eve.
Yeah, John and Mary. Whatever that's from.
Wally being lonely is like Adam, which is why God created Eve, so that man would not be lonely anymore.
I hope that listeners can hear how badly I'm rolling my eyes right now.
The Axiom, the ship, is compared to Noah's Ark.
Mm-hmm.
Eve bringing back the
plant
is like the dove bringing back the olive tree branch after the flood.
I picked up on the John and Mary thing, right? Like, I totally get that. I did not in any way ever lean into any other religious overtones of this film. But I also wasn't raised in a religious family like you were, so interesting.
There are those connections.
Yes, and I see them. And please don't ruin this movie by putting religion into it.
You don't have to. It's not going to be ruined. And we were talking about like places like Disney,
mm-hmm.
Amazon, Walmart, comparing that to by and large. At the time, he was thinking, the creators of WALL-E were thinking more of McDonald's, mm-hmm. as by and large. Creating brand loyalty in children was a big
still is.
I mean, that's children turn into adults and adults fight for their children
because of nostalgia, and it keeps just,
and all the, you know, they'll give you toys and food. And
I mean, you know, how long has Mickey Mouse been around? Mickey Mouse has been around so long that he's now technically there are parts of him that are public domain.
Yeah, the early versions of Mickey Mouse are public domain now.
And yet I, as an almost 40-year-old adult, still love Disney stuff. And, you know, it's, I get that Disney's kind of inherently slightly a little bit evil, and you know, a lot of their practices aren't super great, and you're not allowed to die in Disneyland, and like, I get it. But also, you know, even this morning I sat down to play Disney Dreamlight Valley, which has Wally in it, and he is beloved. In fact, there was a poll done, and Wally was voted as the most beloved villager in all of Disney Dreamlight Valley, and Eve is there too. And I got to really, I can run around with them and garden with them.
And they're voiced by the actors.
Yes, they've got the same voices, and they're so precious and sweet. And like, you know, they're my babies. So like, I get it. Like, yes, corporations have taken over so much of this earth, and all we really should be doing is making art and eating fruit. And instead we've got to pay so that we can see the next Disney movie. But like, damn it. I don't know. I just love this film. I love this film. See me.
It's so beautiful.
And it's so cute.
Yes.
One of my favorite lines in the entire film is when John and Mary, you know, the ship's kind of turning onto the side, and all of the big blobby human beings are like falling, basically, because the ship's been rotated. And Mary says, "John, get ready to have some kids," as she uses him as kind of a slingshot to protect the babies that are also falling. It's such a great line, because clearly there's been a romance starting between these two people because of Wally, right? Wally bumped them out of their technological comas, and then they found each other, and now, you know, and now they protected the babies on the ship. I love that line. Kathy Najimy is such a fantastic actress, and, you know, she was Peggy from King of the Hill, and she's done 1,000 things, but like, I don't know, she's kind of one of those comfort voices that whenever I hear her, I'm always like, oh, I love her. It's sort of the same way, I guess, when you hear John Ratzenberger too. It's sort of like, Aww.
There used to be a time when when I went into a Pixar film, I was like, ooh, I wonder who John Ratzenberger is going to play.
Yeah, like, who's going to be? He got a beefy part.
And then he did. And once you hear it, you're like, oh, there he is.
But now he hasn't been a part of a Pixar movie for a while, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, because things they kind of didn't need him to be their good luck charm anymore. But then, you know, as I was saying in Ratatouille, Pixar has changed a lot in terms of quality and what they're putting out.
Yeah, you know. Toy Story 5. I'm sure he'll be in that one.
Well, yeah, because he'd have to be Ham, right? Yep. I don't even know what happened to Ham in the... I didn't watch Toy Story 4.
I know you didn't.
I don't want him.
One of my favorite lines, because it was repeated after we had watched Ratatouille, the same line is repeated again. I don't want to survive. I want to live. I've come to very much appreciate that line because you're like, is life really just about surviving and getting through every day, or
just about
living life
and being true to yourself? Fullest. And
I really enjoy at the end, the 2D animated bits part of the credits.
Oh, wow, you really jumped ahead, didn't you?
Well, I thought you were about to ask about rating.
No, I was actually going to go into the ending of the movie, mainly when, you know, the plants, Otto is defeated and the plants put into the thing, the ship returns to Earth. But most importantly,
Wally is hurt.
And Eve is just stopping at nothing to try to save him. So she blasts him back to his little... you know, his little truck home, and she's desperately trying to replace the parts of him that have been utterly destroyed by this adventure. And I love how his little cockroach friend Hal is kind of like pacing back and forth while she's fixing him, like a dad in a, you know, hospital waiting room or something.
Yeah,
it's such a cute moment. 50s. But then Wally comes back, but he doesn't come back for a moment. And when I saw that for the first time, I was just in utter tears, like crying hysterically. And of course, my friends were mortified because how dare I show emotion in ever. And yeah, it's, you know, it's such a sort of terrible kind of psych out, but an important psych out for us and for Eve, because like Wally's back, but Wally is not back for a moment. In fact, when she tries to show him, you know, all of his treasures, his response is to compact them into a trash cube.
Yeah.
Which
is so sad.
It is so sad. You know, there's that moment where she kind of has to realize that, like, this guy that she fell in love with is gone. You know, the body remains, but the soul is not there. And so she holds his little hand, and she gives him a little kiss. And she hums the first few bars of the love song to him, and that's when he wakes up, right? He's essentially saved by true love's kiss, which is a very Disney thing. In fact, not too long ago, while you were asleep and I couldn't fall asleep, I was watching Enchanted, where, you know, true love's kiss is a huge part of that movie, which, by the way, that movie holds up and is wildly underrated, but that's a podcast for another day. You know, the last kiss that you know, Eve gives him is the kiss that saves him, and he comes back, and then he gets to celebrate with his little band of misfits, you know, all these kind of like broken robots that he saved off the ship from the repair ward, including Mo. Who's there, who's like Mo, his little protector. And yeah, and so the movie kind of ends with, you know, humans planting seeds again and trying to become one with nature again. And something that I love is, like, the camera kind of pans out through the city, right? This big, barren, and dusty city filled with trash. But then it kind of, like, it pans over this yard of flowers, right? Of plants growing, showing that life has found a way. You know, and then another thing that I absolutely adore about this movie are the credits. How they start, you know, it shows the history of what happens to the people that have returned to Earth. I guess it shows the future of what's going to happen to the people that have returned to Earth through past art history. So the first images we see are very cave wall-esque, right? And then it leads walls, into
Egyptian
hieroglyphs, Egyptian, and then Greek and Roman, and then, you know, Renaissance, neoclassical, and then it goes into different, like Van Gogh, like Monet, Renoir.
8-bit.
Well, yeah, and then, once the credits start scrolling, all the characters become, 8-bit, video game characters, which is really cute. I don't think that you realize it until you see it. Because you see, fish a couple times in the credits, but one of the first shots of an animal that you see in this entire film is in the credits, and it's this beautiful bluebird that's painted in, the style of Monet. And it's right there, giant on screen, right? And you don't realize that that's the first time you've seen an animal, basically the whole film. Short of, the fish that they're pulling out of the river that are, little sketches. Here's the first proper animal that you see the entire film is this gorgeous bluebird. And then the bluebird flies away, and you see Wally and Eve in a beautiful field of flowers. And that's when the credits start to scroll. And I'm giving myself goosebumps talking about it because it's such a beautiful thing. You don't realize that you don't really see any animal. I guess the cockroach, but you know, animals and insects and blah, blah, blah. And also cockroaches are the fucking worst. And we've had our own experiences with those little bastards. They do live forever. Them and Twinkies. It is a beautiful film. It is absolutely one of my all-time favorite movies. Do you have any other thoughts that you want to talk about?
I also liked that the movie not only does it end with all that great 2D animation, but mm-hmm. then you also get Peter Gabriel's Down to Earth, which makes sense. Down to Earth, here we go.
And also, it was pointed out on the IMDb trivia that the song itself starts as very much just one man singing, and then it ends with a whole chorus, right, of kind of Earth music, and chanting, and choirs and shit, which is kind of cool because, again, it's kind of an allegory, right, or it shows the path that humans are now taking now that they're back on Earth. And it makes me wonder if the other ships are going to come back too. And as much as I don't want a sequel to Wall-E because I think it's a perfect story, I do want to know, some answers as to how life on the ship works.
I don't think the sequel is going to show you how they have sex.
I want to know. And B, I have nothing but hope. This movie is so hopeful. And I think that's why it's so dear to me, because I do love a good, hopeful story, especially a nice, succinct, hour 45 movie that is just perfectly charming and lovely and beautiful and hopeful, which I guess leads into the ratings. Yeah, if you're ready for it.
I'm ready.
No shocker here, I give this movie 5 stars. I would give this movie 6 stars. This is such a beautiful film, not only for my memories of getting to see it, how I got to see it for the first time, of watching it with you in theater, of, you know, just how beautiful it is. I love Wall-E. So yeah, it is top 5 stars. What about you?
4.5 for me.
That's fair.
I love this movie. It's done so well. It looks great. The music's great.
What's preventing it from getting a fiver?
The story is fun to follow, but it is
a little lacking.
Yeah, a little lacking, but it's still beautiful to see these two robots, and it's like a silent film almost mm-hmm. to me, which is great. I love silent films, but it just doesn't quite have the element that I really like about Pixar films or even animated films.
Yeah.
But, 4.5 stars is still
it's still very high. Great. I respect the hell out of that.
There are certain Pixar movies where the stories are just so much
more,
and the music's so much more.
Yeah. Coco, for instance, Jesus Christ, Coco's so good. That's a story, and that's music, right? But for me, the hope of Wall-E and the beauty of Wall-E is in the love and kindness. And, you know, I think it's a beautiful message to take away from it is, you know, small acts of kindness can change lives, and love, irrational love, can change the world.
So, Maggie.
Yes, Caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Get it.
Would Oscar Isaac have made this movie better?
It wouldn't have made it worse. I don't think it would have it would have improved upon it, because his most perfect voice of all the voices in the world would have been a part of it. I don't think it's necessary to add him, but it wouldn't have made the movie worse. So yeah, sure. And for the question, yes, it would have made the movie better.
Question number two, which character would you have had Oscar Isaac do the voice for?
I don't know. Like, all the voices are pretty iconic. I realize that Jeff Garlin's become somewhat problematic over the years with his, you know, unnecessarily rough behavior on sets and things. He hasn't aged well, I guess, in terms of his personality and who he is. So I guess if I had to replace anybody, I would replace him. I would have given Oscar Isaac the captain's voice, the captain's role, because it's a nice beefy role. And then, you know, also he would have been just the most perfect baby blob human man that I've ever seen. And I definitely would have tried to figure out how sex worked in the Wally world. And that was this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Wally, the sweetest little robot to ever exist. We hope you loved this episode as much as we enjoyed making it for you. Of course, always leave us 5 stars or any reviews at all, honestly, on your platform, podcast platform of choice. You can follow us on Instagram at Movie Mingle Pod, on Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod, where you get to see how I, Maggie, lists all the films in order of how much I like them. Wally's going to be pretty high up there, guys. Shocker. We've got our YouTube channel, Movie Mingle Podcast, Caveman is Nodding, where you can listen to the videos while you putz around and do your chores. And of course, you can always reach out to us at moviemingle pod@gmail.com. We love doing the show, folks. 20 episodes is really something to be quite proud of, and I'm very proud that we've gotten to do it together as a goofy little couple of nerds. I love you so much, K-Man. You're my whole wide world. So yeah, join us next week for the last installment of Nolan Fest, which will be Inception, and I'm very excited to talk about. And we are very excited to talk about that film as well, because it's another barn burner, you guys. It's another banger. That's about it. Why don't you go find your cute robot soulmate and go mingle. Bye.
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Beach. What's that bar?
I'm a little confused.
Well, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't
want
to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. 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 Toga.